Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by the beat reporters Jim Thomas and Matthew DeFranks. And guys, this is going to be a somewhat less depressing version of the podcast because the team has been notably less terrible, albeit playing against bad teams. Is that fair? JT, is that fair?
Yeah. Remember the scene in Major League, the groundskeepers, where they say they're not so crummy when they start winning a couple of games. I think that's kind of where we're at in the season. They're not so crummy. And I think the little malaise leading up to the trade deadline is gone. I mean, and we talked about this right after the trade deadline. You're and especially Matt, you know, emphasized that it's not so much about the wins and losses. You're looking at compete level. You're looking at intensity. You're looking at how different players play, maybe younger players, less proven players, new players. And to a large degree, I think they're getting the compete level that they need. Now there's still moments of bonehead plays, but it's a different looking team.
Yeah. I think there's a lot more of a plan, I guess I would say, right? You look at, since we last recorded, they've moved Buchnevich inside and given that a look and trying out different things with, you know, that Verana, Kapanen, and Buchnevich line, adding Torpchenko up top, moving Shen into the 3C role. You can see that there's a plan, and it may not, you know, all club together in the rest of the season, but I think you can look at what they're doing and understand what and why they're doing it, which has got to bring a little bit of solace to a Blues fan that, you know, maybe in mid-December or early January, you weren't quite sure what the plan was. And, you know, after the trade deadline, obviously that kind of solidified where things would go. And then now this is the next step of kind of building towards next year's team. And I think it's a lot better than it was before, like JT said.
Yeah, when you talk about building the game, JT, it's a you look at, I'll always look at the three elements that coaches always talk about. I mean, just as a group, I mean, we've talked a lot about individuals, and we'll talk about some of the individuals here in a bit. But as far as the group goes, the group's got to have the compete level, the will. There's a sort of a collective will that's probably step one. Two, you know, the group's got to develop some chemistry at both ends of the ice. I mean, the coaches talk about being connected. You know, you just have to be able to work together both ends, just work in concert, be in lockstep. And then finally, if those two things happen, maybe the group gains some confidence collectively. But in hockey, Jim, it's so critical that the collective, all of these things, it has to come together collectively, because the individuals doing this and that, it doesn't get you a whole lot in the NHL. The group has to, it has to be, as the Blues proved when they won the Cup, it was a group effort. And right now, failure has been a group effort.
Yeah. It takes a team effort both ways. No, I totally agree. And I think more than any other sport, the collective, the connectivity is most important in hockey. And I can't really tell you why that's the case, but it really seems to be the case that a lot of times the team can be greater than the sum of its parts. And then that was the 2019 Cup team. And a lot of times by support, I mean, you don't see quite as many times where, say, there's a defender in his own end and he's kind of hung out to dry. He's maybe in a tough spot on the ice, but he doesn't have a teammate there supporting him to help him out. A lot of times the Blues would be dashing up the ice to get on the rush. So I think we are seeing more of that, even though, you know, some of these players are still kind of strangers to each other when you add new players and you see some players getting larger roles. Buchnevich is still learning the center position, although he's done surprisingly well on the faceoff. So yeah, I think some of that's going on. And I think exactly what Doug Armstrong said he wanted to do. He wanted to start building the foundation for next year right now. I think some of that's going on, and you see it not only what they're doing with Buchnevich and some of the top lines, but they're looking at players. It's clear they're looking at players. They're rotating in defensemen on that third pairing more so than they ever have, and they're rotating in forwards on largely on the fourth line. It's just a shame that Jake Neighbors can't be part of the exercise right now, although as Matt reported today, he's getting very close.
Yeah, as far as connectivity goes, it's I think I remember reading it was a story or an article or report, some that they did a study on soccer and it being a weak link sport, in that the weakest player on the field's kind of brought you down more than the best player on the field brought you up. And I think there's a lot of that in hockey as well. I mean, we could even look at Edmonton. I mean, they have the two best players in the league, maybe the two highest scorers, and they're right on the fringe of a playoff spot. For, you know, if you want to add in connectivity to depth and how that manifests itself. And JT, as you were talking before on breakouts, whether you have the three forwards already in the neutral zone or if they're back supporting the puck to get out clean and get in clean. Yeah, it matters. And I think you're going to see some continuity between the group that's on the ice right now and the group that's on the ice next season. And the more that they can work through different roles and find different partners and figure out different matchups right now, the better they'll be next year. And it still might not be, you know, as good as past Blues teams have been anticipated, obviously. But it'll still be, you know, a plan, a path forward.
Well, JT, one thing that the Chief stressed when he took over for Mike Yeo is he was a situation where he had some new guys that were still, obviously, you're trying to learn each other on the ice, and that became an issue for that particular team. But also just the off-the-ice thing. Now, of course, this team that just got blown up, you know, had pretty good off-the-ice connections. It just didn't stop working well on the ice, so the team gets blown up. But now it will be important with new guys coming in, and this being largely the group that's going to go to camp next year. It's important to get the off ice stuff going as well. And, you know, Chief really put a stress on that when he took over and tried to mold that team that eventually made its run. And you've got, you know, some new guys, they're just trying to find their way with the group on and off the ice, but off the ice is important. And you got this time to use this section of the season. So when you go into camp, everybody knows everybody. It won't be like the start of the 19 season where everybody's like, hey, how you doing? I remember I played against you, hit you in the face with my stick. Sorry about that. You know, so on and so forth.
So you're saying what, maybe Buchnevich, as the weather gets warmer, needs to start having some barbecues or.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. I remember Krug said that was the worst part. You know, he comes to the Blues and then it's the COVID season. And he said that was the worst part. He didn't really, not just himself, but you know, the players' wives, they just didn't, they're all part of this extended family, and they didn't get a chance to meet or to hang out with the players. And yeah, that is part of it, and that makes a tight team. The 19 team was the cup team was very tight on and off the ice. I think this, the team that was just blown up, apparently got along very well off the ice, but it didn't translate on the ice. But that is a very much a part of it. And as we approach the off season now, a lot of players will scatter from St. Louis. The St. Louis summers are a little rough for some of these Canadian guys that are not used to our trademark heat and humidity. But there will be plenty of opportunities for them to do that. And I'm sure Chief will be all for it.
Yeah. I sometimes struggle with the off ice translating to on ice, because sometimes it's the other way around. You know, sometimes you have good chemistry because you're happy and you're winning and it's a good mood all the time. But yeah, I mean, it's, you want to like the people you work with, right? JT, I like you. I like hanging out with you.
I guess. Yeah.
I get what you're saying, Gordo, and they have one more long-ish road trip, the three-gamer that the Detroit and LA teams that they can maybe do some team bonding on, and Outside of that, it's a lot of one game road trips that don't really allow for a lot of team bonding on the road. But in the end, it's, you know, if they want to make it so, they'll put the effort into those relationships to make it so.
Yeah, you know, team building. Let's all. I'm glad that corporate America, the one good thing about the pandemic is that companies quit forcing employees to do the silly, trust catch and all that fun stuff that, you know, these getaways to get the group to work better together. Everybody's just working from their home, and everybody hates each other. So what? So at least that's been, that part of the pandemic's been easy on companies. But for hockey, yeah, it's an emotional game. The other thing about hockey, it's such an emotional game. Guys have to stand up for each other. The intensity level's high. And, you know, if you get situations where, you know, guys are getting punished on the ice and nobody's doing anything about it, instead not coming in and raising a hand or anything, that is unfortunate. Now, we talked just about some of the individuals now. For a while there, Jordan Kyrou was fighting it offensively. Now he's still fighting it in terms of the overall play on the ice, but at least JT, he's gotten some offense going here, and he and Thomas, they have to be productive for this team to go forward. And it seems like maybe he's recovered from whatever funk, or pulled out of whatever funk he was in, at least at the offensive end.
Yeah, and you recall last year, and he didn't quite get out of it as emphatically as he has right now. You know, he hit a lull, probably a little longer lull in the second half of the season, and maybe it was because of the All-Star game. I think the All-Star game, for a lot of there's so much going on with the skills contest, extra media obligations, so on. I think it's draining for some of these players. I think he was a little tired coming out of the All-Star weekend, even at his young age. But yeah, you can see Thomas and Kyrou, I think, even taking their, and they've played a lot together already, but I think you can see them taking their chemistry and their teamwork to even another level. And I think that's reassuring, not only for Blues fans, but, you know, for the front office, for the coaching staff, that there's still some growth there that can happen between the two. And, Thomas looking for Kyrou. Thomas joked, yeah, it'd be nice if he'd pass it to me once. But, you're saying, Robert, that would mean you actually want to shoot the puck. But no, Thomas is tracking. He looks like he's going to get close to 20 goals here. He's got 16 with 16 games left. But, even in today's with scoring up these last couple of years, 30 goals is a big number. I think he's in maybe the top 25 in the league in scoring. So it's good to see, because if you have a Jordan Kyrou that isn't scoring, a lot of times you have a problem.
Yeah, we saw that for that like 5-game stretch when he didn't have a point, and I think that included Berube's comments about the passion with his top players and all that. But you know, that's the good and bad with Jordan Kyrou, is that when he's on, there's production. When he's not, there's nothing really to follow that up, right? So the hat trick in Columbus, I found it important for Kyrou's confidence, in that he's not, playing tentatively and giving the puck away and turning it over a lot. But I wasn't all that, I didn't come away wowed by the hat trick. The first goal, very nice off the rush with Robert Thomas. Second one was a loose puck with the goalie down. The third one was an empty netter. So in the grand scheme, sometimes you look at a guy's game and you say, well, he played better than zero goals scored. He should have had one or two. And sometimes you look at a game where he scores three and say, maybe he played like he deserved one or one and a half. But in the end, the production matters, and the production translates to confidence for a guy like him, and whose offense is really, his entire game. So if that sort of game can translate and can feed into the rest of his game moving forward, then obviously it's a good thing for the Blues. And for him to follow it up on Sunday with a goal against Vegas, I think that matters too. So, I don't know whether players now set goals as to, I want to hit 30 goals, I want to hit 40 goals or not, but you can't hit 40 before you hit 30. So step in the right direction. And as JT said, good sign for the Blues to see these guys keep growing.
I like that he's been kind of a high volume shooter lately. He's either shared or led the team lead in both overall attempts and shots on goal. And on a team where too many players want to defer or make the extra pass, I think that's really good. It seems like he's developing maybe more of a kind of a shooter's mentality.
It's funny about empty net goals. Some guys have been, you know, kind of embarrassed to take them. Other guys will gladly take the empty net goal and then somehow find that to be an affirmation of their ability. I mean, they get excited about getting that empty netter, even when it's a 10-foot shot that was gift wrapped by a teammate. So it is, but hey, it's better than that. It's better than just coming into a game without any goals lately, because that certainly weighs heavily on guys like Kyrou.
Yeah. What's the old saying? They don't ask how, they ask how many, right?
It's some guys who are just greedy scorers. We'll take them, you know, and just find value. And, and that's, if that's your role, to JT's point, volume shooter, always trying to generate, if that's the one thing you do really well, then yeah, I guess you take it. All right, so let's talk about the D-men, JT. First of all, chat room whipping boy Colton Parayko now talking about how he's kind of playing a little more free, a little more just playing the game, and maybe the weight of everything had an impact on him, besides the back issues that have plagued him previously. You know, maybe just trying to be the guy and having this discussion on the podcast, the chat rooms every week about he's not really the guy, but he has to be because there's nobody else. Man, maybe JT, that just did take a toll, and maybe he's found a way to at least mentally try to move past it.
Yeah, you wonder about that. And it was the eve of the trade deadline. It was a Thursday night, March 2nd in San Jose. Who knows? Maybe Armstrong, Armstrong, he wasn't on the trip then. He was back in St. Louis, but maybe Armstrong, hey, you're not going anywhere. Because that night, he just seemed to be playing more relaxed, more free. And it's good to see. And you see him skating with the puck more up the ice, which is a strength. Matt talked about, hey, play to your strength. If you're a good shooter like Kyrou, shoot the puck. And so he's a good skater. With that big frame, it takes him a little while to get going, but he can carry the puck. He's actually shooting it a little bit more. And he's, again, it's all relative by Parayko standards. I think he's playing a little bit more physical. He seems like he's had his best games lately against San Jose. And so, you know, maybe they could go back to a pandemic year scheduling where they play San Jose like 12 times or something. But that's been good to see. And then another thing defensively is it fits to how they're kind of using personnel. I like what they're doing with Krug. I think that's probably the way to use him. He's on the third pairing, so he's not getting rarely getting 20 minutes, but he still has to play some defense, but usually not maybe against the top line guys. And you're featuring him on the power play, which is getting a little better, but still not anywhere where it needs to be. But I think that's what they should just do with Krug going forward, assuming he's part of the squad next year.
Yeah, I mean, Parayko, he had that game in San Jose where he was everywhere, where he was dipsy doodling guys and going around them and setting up Logan Brown and driving the net, crashing into the goalie. He was everywhere and shutting down plays, sticking passing lanes. We saw some of that, you know, the home game against San Jose and even against Vegas most recently. And I think you do have to be cautious, because you do get these glimpses every now and then and you want to see it consistently. But this is who they thought that they were signing to that deal, where they thought they would get maybe a little excess, surplus value, on his $6.5 million cap hit. But with Parayko, this is a project. This is one of the Blues' main concerns, right? Main things they need to focus on and fix, because 7 more years, you can't just kind of sweep that onto the third pairing like you do with Torrey Krug. You have to kind of fix what's been going wrong, and Parayko seemed to have done that in the last 2 weeks or so. So definitely encouraging. He looks a lot more comfortable with, like JT said, with the puck offensively. And I think that's probably translated a little bit defensively in the corners. You see him maybe throwing the body a little bit more. I think you'd still like to see him, you know, tie up guys more in the net front. But at this point, you're taking the positive steps as they come. And there's been quite a few of them for him recently.
It's too bad they can't bring Larry Robinson back. I think that was Parayko's best hockey was about that season and a half, two seasons when Robinson was there. And he was like the Colton Parayko coach. He was constantly in Parayko's ear. So I wonder if they can coax him out of Florida and back with the team a little bit. I'm guessing not, or he'd be up here.
Another guy that's played a bit better. Again, it's all relative and it's been a short sequence here, but Marco Scandella coming back from getting the hip cleaned up, moving better. And, you know, this team needs guys who can take some tough minutes. You know, he's not a shutdown defender. He's played that role for a stretch. At his age, he really can't be that guy. But you need somebody to kill penalties. You need somebody to take defensive zone starts. You need some guys who – another guy who can take some, at least some matchup responsibility instead of casting offensive players like Krug into that role, which has not gone well. You know, I don't know if they're going to get how much Marco has to offer, but at least there might be some value to the team with him at his current price, or some value to another team. Where before we were thinking, oh God, he's just a guy you're going to have to buy out at some point.
Yeah. Maybe we're going to see, or we're seeing a kind of a mini Bouwmeester effect. You know, Bouwmeester was the whipping boy, had surgeries on both hips over a couple off seasons. And finally, when he got over that, it was like, wow. And maybe Scandella, especially going into next season, you know, he's still, as he told Matt, he still has a little bit of soreness. It's usually, you know, 9 to 12 months before you're feeling totally back, and he's not there yet in terms of that time frame. And so, yeah, do they rethink at 3.2 million? Do they rethink trying to move him? And like, boy, if we could move one of our $6.5 million guys and have Scandella in there, or maybe it just makes Scandella a little bit more attractive to another team in the offseason if they still want to move him. And again, there's still 16 games where he can show what he's doing. But I think he's played reasonably well. And like I think we talked about this last week, a lot of times a guy with his skill set, because he's not like a flashy skater or a defensive defenseman scorer, if you're not noticing them, that means things are going pretty well. And I think that's kind of where Scandella is right now.
Hey, you got noticed for a good thing the other night, the slap pass to Tyler Pitlick on the back door, kind of threaded the needle there. I asked him yesterday if that was a shot or a pass. He goes, that was a pass. but yeah, JT, I think what you mentioned earlier about Krug playing third pair of minutes, you know, I think Scandella's addition has a lot to do with that, where you're able to take some responsibility away from Parayko and Letty and give it to Scandella and Falk, and you're also able to take some minutes away from Krug and give it to Scandella and Falk. So I know the possession numbers haven't been all that pretty for Scandella and Falk. They're around 40% in, you know, shot attempts, shots on goal, expected goals, things like that. But they've had a positive goal differential, which I guess can be attributed to luck or short sample size or whatever. But in the end, Scandella, he's not going to be healthy fully until maybe June to September over the summer. And this is something that has bothered him for years. He said even last summer, you know, he got surgery in September, but over the summer he got to the point where walking was painful, where he couldn't do workouts for 5 days at a time because he had to be shut down. And you know, him and the Blues collectively came to the decision to have surgery, and with the understanding that you may be playing in 4 to 6 months, but you're not going to be truly back healthy for, you know, 100% for 9 to 12. And for him to be kind of put back into this, and I think he played 20 minutes a couple games ago, and Getting those bid minutes. I think he leads the team in shorthanded time on ice. It's like a lot of other things with the Blues, you know, baby steps in the right direction to seeing what you have in him and maybe other teams seeing what they could have in him.
Yeah, and I think, JT, as we start to wind down this edition of the Net Front, at least you're asking Marco Scandella to do what he's done before. Now, he hasn't done it as well as he did once upon a time for the hip and the other reasons, just advancing age as well, a mileage on his body. But you're asking him to do what he's done before. This team has asked defenseman after defenseman after defenseman to do something that they haven't done before. Now, maybe they're taking Torrey off the hook. They're still leaving Letty in an unfamiliar role, still asking Falk to be the better all-around defender than he ever was before he came here. But at least if Marco could be Marco, at least it makes sense, JT, because you have a guy who's out there. He knows what he can do, what he has done in the past. If he can do some semblance of that going forward, he can help this team because, you need someone who can play those minutes, minutes.
Yeah, and it's not like because of this it's like, okay, the defense is fixed. Scandella's filling his role, but it is a step in the right direction. The problem is if they're really standing pat and coming back with the same group of guys, and when they're healthy, it's a lot of guys. I mean, they're rotating three guys into that sixth defenseman role, and I'm sure none of them are too happy about it, except maybe Tucker, who's in the big leagues, you know. And plus, you've got Perunovic in the minor leagues. That's nine guys, but still, at least they have some options.
Yeah, and we've talked before, you know, like Gordy's mentioned about, they have a lot of guys that fit certain roles, but maybe it doesn't all fit together. And no matter what kind of mix you have on the back end, there's always going to be a role for, you know, a guy that can penalty kill and play tough minutes. And, you know, whether they're performing well enough is up to them, and whether they're, you know, justifying the cap hit is up to them, but there's always going to be kind of a role for that type of player.
Yeah, and fans, they want to see Tyler Tucker play 20, you know, 2 minutes a night, because he's, you know, he plays with physicality, and you notice him, and for some good things he does, the hits and the standing up for teammates. Again, those are hard minutes. Those are hard minutes for a young guy, and we've seen what happens when he gets caught in some of those situations. There's a ways to go with them, and I just wish fans would understand just how hard some of these minutes are, you know, defensive zone starts, matchups, penalty kill. But you know, we're finding out how hard they are because some guys did really bad jobs at filling them. So there's
and it just takes defensemen longer. It's not quite a goalie marination project, but it takes defensemen a little longer.
Well, guys, this is the we'll wrap up this edition of the Net Front Presents. We appreciate it. This is more positive.
Yeah,
we're more positive today, so we appreciate that, and we'll continue to watch our heroes finish out the season to see what they can start building toward next year. I appreciate Jim Thomas, Matthew DeFranks for making time today. A reminder that we have so much going on in the print edition of the Post-Dispatch, as well as all the stuff we're doing online, a crazy amount of stuff we're doing online, podcasts, videos, extra stories. And so there's just a ton of content, so please do keep supporting local journalism and keep us doing what we do for you. So for JT, for Matt, I'm Jeff. Until next time, see ya!